Hello and welcome to the Adrian Tchaikovsky Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where we review every single Adrian Tchaikovsky book that we read as we read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish an Adrian Tchaikovsky book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today, like normal, is Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And today we are reviewing another Adrian Tchaikovsky book.
Surprise.
In fact, two. No, I only say that because I started just looking back through, you know, like the sfbrp.com/episode lists. And go there, find the link if you're wondering what books we've reviewed in the past. This is every single book. We're up to episode 575.
It's an extensive list.
An extensive, exhaustive list of almost, well, I say exhaustive. It's a pretty comprehensive list.
Yeah.
Yes, two books ago, we reviewed an Adrian Tchaikovsky, or two episodes ago, we reviewed an Adrian Tchaikovsky book. And we're back at it again. We previously just did One Day All This Will Be Yours. Earlier on this year, we did Alien Clay and what was the other one that we just did recently? Oh, Service Model, but I guess we...
That
was from last year, actually.
Yes. So you went to the list and clicked on the author's...
No, I didn't look at the author's. Literally just two episodes ago. It was Adrian Tchaikovsky. But it doesn't feel that way because I've been reading lots of other books.
Yeah.
And that one I read and then I waited for you to finish it and then reread it. You know, like that happens sometimes. I'll read a book and I'm like, oh, this is also a book for Juliana. She should read this.
I'm sometimes a bit behind the things.
Yeah. So since we finished that one, I've read two more Adrian Tchaikovsky. Actually, no, that's not true. Either way, it doesn't really matter the order. But recently I've read three Adrian Tchaikovsky books.
Yep.
One of them was the book, One Day All This Will Be Yours.
Yes.
And now we will do...
Because I found it in the library app and yes. I said, hey, you might enjoy reading this.
Yes. And then, oh, that was it. Yeah, because it was a library app one. So I did read that one. I had a lot of fun with it. But this other one, Adrian Tchaikovsky doesn't only write science fiction. He also writes fantasy.
Yeah.
And so I heard that last year, two of his novels were nominated for awards, for Hugo Awards, I think it was. One of them was Service Model. The other one was Alien Clay. And other people said those weren't even his best book last year. The best book that he wrote last year was the third book in the Tyrant Philosophers series.
Okay.
And the Tyrant Philosophers is his current ongoing fantasy epic fantasy series.
Some people just churn out the books.
Oh my goodness, he's churned out a lot of books. And there's another book. There's another one called Shroud, which is being nominated in this year's awards, like the Goodreads People's Choice Award.
Right. I've brought that up here.
The Reader's Favorite Science Fiction opening round nominees. Yeah, look, here it is.
Up on the top right.
Was it top right?
There.
Oh yeah, it's weird because every time they load the because they don't want people just to vote for the first one on the page. So each time you reload the page, look at this.
Oh, yeah.
It rearranges them so they don't come out with this. They're not ordered by anything there as well. So
that means you actually have to look for the books.
Yeah, you're going to be like, no, where is the book? Where is the book? So anyway, Adrian Tchaikovsky's Shroud has come out and I wanted to read that. And I'm like, oh, that'll be my next book. But then I'm like, no, I've still got two other Adrian Tchaikovsky books to go. And next year, the fourth book in the Children of... ruin slash memory
time.
Slash time yeah. slash oh no time
the children
ruin
of.
Moon yeah the next Children of book is coming out.
Ooh, so looking forward to that.
Are you did you read the third book or did I tell you not to bother reading the third book because it's not worth it?
I have just really good memories of
the first two books are on the SFBRP must reads list. More of that later. And then I've read other books as well. I've been checking back out the SFBRP must read list books that were on the list just to see if they should still be on the list.
Yeah.
And I keep telling myself I'm going to record some solo podcasts where I listen back to the previous reviews that we've done of those books and then do an updated solo review. But I've just been busy with work trips.
We've both been busy.
And then I read a book called Apple in China, which is sort of like a history book about how Apple ended up in China, which is fascinating.
But nonfiction.
But is nonfiction. Put it this way, if it was fiction, you'd be like, well, that's not very satisfying. They just did it by accident. Like they didn't have any agency and they were just looking for a good deal and then this other thing did this and you're like, but what, that can't be possible. And of course it's like now the most valuable company in the world and the manufacturing in China is the most valuable manufacturing location in the world.
Absolutely.
And they didn't mean to do it. It just happened. And you're like, oh, so you didn't even, there was no China plan. You had no China manager. You had no China political advisor, nothing.
No agenda.
Just no agenda. It just all ended up in China. And then like in 2016, 2017, Tim Cook is like, wait, what's happened now? We're being held hostage by the Chinese government for what? Anyway, so that's an interesting one. So, let me go through the notes. So the framing story for this is that
The book after the Apple in China book is then now the book we're
going to get to this one. No, I've started another book, and I'm just saying, I'm just talking about examples of books that I've read in between. But the point is, I didn't want to. What I really wanted to do is talk about this third book in this fantasy series, the Tyrant Philosophers series by Adrian Tchaikovsky. But there's two other books, or two and a half of the books. There's two books and a novella before you get there. And I was like, well, I want to read them, but I didn't want to do that thing where I've done it before with fantasy books, where you read the first book and then you read the second book and you're like, well, just that book more. And the next episode is like, yeah, we did 16 Ways to Defend a Castle or a Walled City. And then the next book is How to Rule an Empire and Get Away with It. And the third book, you read the third book, and then there's a fourth book and or whatever it is, you know, in that same style. And you're just like, yeah, it's just this, it's just more of the same story, you know.
But sometimes that can be actually a good thing to be talking about, because then... Yes. You will be sure that when you start reading this series and you want to more of that, there will be more of that.
So what I did is I decided to combine the first two books. So this episode is about the first two books in Adrian Tchaikovsky's Tyrant Philosophers trilogy series, because there's more than one book. I think there's another book coming out because Adrian Tchaikovsky writes like 8 books a year.
And which is insane.
It feels like it.
I just need to fiddle with a cable.
You fiddle with a cable. I'll keep talking. So what we're going to be talking about today is we're going to be talking about the City of Last Chances and the House of Open Wounds. It carries on with The Lives of Bitter Rain, which is a novella, which kind of introduces the main character of the third book, The Days of Shattered Faith. So the next time we talk about this, I'll probably do the novella and that, because it's kind of like the continuing story of, or, you know, it's the same character in the novella leading into the third book of
that
the novel.
That makes sense.
Yes.
Put it in twos.
Yeah, well, and then, yeah, oh, next year is book four.
I hope he stays within
expected 2026.
I hope he stays within the kind of the rhythm of the titles. The titles kind of have rhythms.
The something of something something.
Yeah.
Yes, it's the something of Last Chances, the something of Open Wounds, the something of Bitter Rain, the something of Shattered Faith, and the something. Oh no, Pretenders to the Throne. No, something something of God. Oh yeah, so it messes up the heart of. Yeah, so it doesn't. So anyway, let's just get into it. So what this is a book about. Or it's a series about an empire which is slowly taking over the world. It says, city by city, kingdom by kingdom, the Palestine have sworn to bring perfection and correctness to an imperfect world.
Oh, God. Okay.
So that's the setup of this. And the first book is taking part in a city which has been conquered, which I'll get into another one. And the second book is in a war camp, you know, sort of like you're out at war, and then there's a hospital unit in the camp, and the people in the camp, you know, are out fighting, and then the people, when they bring in the bodies, when there's a big battle happening, they bring in the bodies back to this hospital, and that's what the House of Open Wounds is. And the City of Last Chances is the city which has been conquered and is being held by the Palestine.
Okay.
So let's go back to, I've written a note here. Come back to these notes. And maybe do I just skip over those notes? Wrote these notes.
Okay,
wrote these notes 2 weeks ago. So what it goes. So let's just get into the first book, The City of Last Chances. But it also has other names. It's also called The City of Long Shadows. And it's called The City of Bad Decisions. It's one of those.
Okay.
It's quite a funny thing that it's like this out of the way city, but it's got interesting stuff going on there.
Yeah.
But it's not the most important city, and it's not the capital city. It's the capital city of like what used to be a kingdom.
Yeah.
It's like this really old dusty city, and what you do is you're picking up like there's character here and character there. It's like a very 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 spread out story with like one person, you get one person's point of view, mm-hmm. and then it kind of gets to the end of that point of view and there's like another character mentioned, mm-hmm. and then the next chapter kind of picks up with that next character as the point of view character,
right.
and they do something, and then someone storms in at the end of there and something happens, you know, they're at a party and they look across and something happens, and then you pick up with the other people leaving, so you're going from viewpoint character, skipping okay. between them.
Yeah.
For example, Yasnik, who's a priest, and Ruslev, who's a soldier, and Blackmane, who's a pawnbroker, Lemya, who is a student and a poet, Vidzia, who is the last remaining head of an old family, and, you know, and the old family is being, you know, taken apart bit by bit, and yeah. she's the last one there. You get Ivan, who's a professor, Mother Gome, who's a magical prostitute, Statlos, which is, turns out Statlos is his name, but that's what I wrote it down as. It turns out Statlos is the position. It's like an officer is all a right. Statlos, I think. Okay. And so you get lots of the, and there's others as well.
I have one question, yeah. which I didn't quite understand. The second person you mentioned, what are they?
A soldier. Ruslav is a soldier.
Okay.
A priest, a soldier, a pawnbroker, a student, and a poet. A family head of, you know, like what used to be a crime family, but wasn't a crime family, but actually it was it. You know, sort of like mm-hmm. mafia stuff. Professors, prostitutes, and then police officers and a fixer. You know, okay. all of this kind of stuff going on. And yeah. And it's a kind of a big sprawling story where you go from place to place mm-hmm. in this fantastical city. And it reminded me quite a bit of a book called Perdido Street Station by Chinan Bieville.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a similar kind of thing. Like, all right, it's a big city. There's industry going on. It's a bit steampunk. It's a bit magic punk. There's like, you know, there's telegraphs in some case, you know, like there's cables going across yeah. the city, but it's also very magical, and you get magical beings and magical this, and there's monsters and you know, but also magical stuff going on, but also it feels like a very kind of like mid-Victorian industrial city, like an industrial revolution going on
okay.
at the same time,
right?
And because what's happening is that they're harnessing as the world, as there's like progress going on in the world.
And now we're talking back about the Adrian Tchaikovsky book.
Yeah, Tchaikovsky book. Well, yeah. actually kind of both. But as there's okay. progress going on, the magic is being harnessed for industrial means.
Right.
And in this case, there's a way of harnessing demons as slave labor.
Okay.
So again, and this is just one factor in the book, in this first book, is that demons, you can contract with the kings of hell mm-hmm. and the kings of hell will send over contracted workers mm-hmm. to you to work in your factories, and they don't have any free will mm-hmm. because they're contracted out, and because it's like, you know, like you draw a pentagram on the floor and conjure it up, and as long as you keep the chalk markings on the floor of the factory, and part of these people are the people who wrote the contracts and are like coming in and going, wait, why did this demon escape? Oh yeah, you messed up here and you have to use these words around the demon. You know, it's like, it's the same kind of like genie kind of thing where you're like, all right, there's some logic here.
Yeah.
You know, we need to fulfill the logic. And if you do the contract, you can get a magical contract. And in a normal fantasy story, or in like traditional fantasy story, rather than this kind of like, you know, someone who's also a science fiction doing his version of grim, dark fantasy.
Yeah.
You can get like this logical puzzle going on mm-hmm. there where you go, well, that would have been possible in all fantasy where you have a fantasy situation where there's a magic system and the system can be knowable by the people involved. It can then be exploited and used for power and industry. So in this
right.
case, they're like, we could use steam power,
yeah.
but that clogs up the air with like coal fire and steam.
Mm-hmm.
So what we can do is just contract demons to sit here and like walk on these treadmills or push these things around, and they can just use their magical hell power, and that way we can get these mills going.
And
you know?
because they're demons, it's viewed as, oh, it's just a demon. It's
yeah,
fine.
It's fine because they're demons.
Yeah. And so it's mostly like a rigorous magic system?
No, again, no. I want you to, like, let's step back from what is a magic system.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Sanderson has magic systems,
yeah.
but then only magical people can use them. So actually, the point of his magic systems well, let me put it this way. Normally, a magic system is written by people who want there to be a cost for magic use.
Yeah.
You know, so a resource.
You can't just spend it. You have to
expend something. So you just expend a magic sphere or there's some wind that capture the wind, or you burn some metal or whatever this kind of Brandon Sanderson-esque magic system.
You have to give something to. Yeah,
yeah. Something is spent. And which is the thing which I dislike about, you know, these kind of formal magic system-y kind of things, is because it makes it too mechanical and it makes it too, I don't know, it doesn't feel like magic anymore if the characters in the book know the rules so much that they can exploit the rules to become more powerful. And Brandon Sanderson does that and ends up, he just follows the powerful people and the kings and the people who become the slavers and the people who become the warriors who just kill everybody.
Yeah.
And Adrian Tchaikovsky comes at it from the other direction, which is like, imagine the bad guys are the good guys in Brandon Sanderson novels. So in a Brandon Sanderson novel, the heroes are the people who are the mighty people who don't really care about the downtrodden people.
Okay.
And they are, if they start as downtrodden people, you know that they are just temporarily embarrassed millionaires or billionaires. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the way that fantasy stories have often worked, and again, in the very reductive way of talking about Brandon Sanderson fantasy novels, is that it's someone who is like a smaller character or a minor character. There is absolutely no way that they're getting through to the end of the book without becoming a prince, without becoming a king, without becoming a fantastic warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why people read them, because they kind of fulfill these power fantasies of like, yes, of course they're going to get the girl. And of course they're... Now, if you've read any Adrian Tchaikovsky, you know that he is zero interested in hero journeys.
Yeah.
He's only interested in anti-hero journeys or non-hero journeys or whatever it is. Like that. Again, there's never going to be that thing. And all of his characters, or like I'd say 90% of his characters, and what makes his writing interesting, is that he is not interested in power for power's sake, for gaining power being the character arc of a hero in either fantasy or science fiction.
Yeah.
He's much more about, you know, the collective action and talking about the servants and talking about the soldiers and talking about the weird, you know, side characters of a normal fantasy book or a normal science fiction book.
Yeah.
And that really.
And this is why we have such a broad mix of characters in this
Yeah, like you do touch on people who are actually in charge of the city.
Yeah.
But you realize they have a boss, and their boss has a boss, and their boss has a boss has a boss. And you kind of weirdly, in some cases, end up rooting for the people who are on the side of the Pal Empire, the Palestine. Is it the Palestine Empire?
Yeah, is that what you said? Yeah.
And in some ways, you end up rooting for them because you're like, oh, but they're just... It reminds me quite a bit, and again, this is very intentional from both of the creators of these, which is the Andor series, where you're following the people who are fighting against the Empire, you know, the normal, like, you know, rebel, you know, the nascent Rebel Alliance that's coming up here.
Yeah.
But you also follow along with two of the officers on the other side. You get the woman, and you're like really rooting for her at one point, and she's like, okay, order all these people killed, and you're like, oh, right. She was a woman facing, like, who was, you know, in a male-dominated workforce. And because there was, like, a strong feminist message with her, you're like, yeah, you go. You prove yourself. That's really great.
You show them.
You show them. And then in the end, you're like, oh, no. You're the bad one. Like,
you're really bad.
Yeah. You're, and also the guy who...
The bureaucrat.
Yeah, the bureaucrat who's in an office job. And he's like, no, I'm better than this. I can rise up. And he gets infatuated with her and stuff. Like, and, I've got to go save you. And in the end,
then you see him sitting with his mother. And
and you're like, oh, I really want him to succeed. And you're like, no, wait. No, he's still on the side of the Nazis or whatever it's going to be. You know what I mean? Anyway, it's a really interesting, like, the view that you get into the Palestine is of these, like, bureaucrats. And when they're going up against each other, you're like, oh, that's good. You managed to get that through. And you're like, no, why am I rooting for the bad guys here, though? And it's because everybody at that level has more in common with each other than they do with the elite upper class as well.
Makes sense.
So that's why you're with a priest and he's with a god that nobody else can see, but he can see that this is Yaznik, And he's the last believer in this god. Literally, he's a priest of a god, which is a real god, but he's the only one left. And so he's looking around, and he hates his god, and his god resents him. But they're the duo. They're the only two there as well.
They're like bound together.
Yes. So
there's this ambiguity that even no matter what background the character is.
Yeah.
It is still a character and a person.
And they're all just trying to get on with stuff.
Yeah.
But let me talk a bit more about, the PAL, where they have these different agencies or these departments. Mm-hmm. So is it departments or agents? Whatever it is. But there's correct appreciation and correct speech. And, you know, it's literally, we're going straight back to like 1984. Yeah. We are doing Ministry of Truth, Ministry of War, and you have like these seven different departments within the palace. And this is explained a bit more in the second book, or you get a bit more of this in the second book. Mm-hmm. And they're bringing order. And the way that they bring order is by ordering things. And because they are rationalists. So it's this quite strange thing that in a lot of science fiction, and this is now more of a science fiction-y kind of idea mm-hmm. here, which is that you have the rationalists. You know, a lot of these, you know, the science fiction...
The Vulcans in Star Trek.
No.
No?
Not like that.
Like the Borg.
No, not like the Borg. Like the heroes. No, what I'm trying to say is, like, when you... Yeah, like the Federation. That's what I'm trying to say. The Federation in Star Wars is very rational. You know, it's always a bit like, oh, they go to a planet and there's something magical going on the planet, but let's investigate further. Oh, it's not magical. It's actually just this alien technology. Oh, what does God need with a starship? You know, all of these different things that go on, they mm-hmm. are explaining things. They are doing science all the time.
Okay,
they
are that's what you mean with rational. I wouldn't have said that as rational, but okay, I understand now.
But this is my point, is that the background of a lot of science fiction is that there is wonder in the world, but a lot of it is, and now let's explain the wonder. Now let's compartmentalize it. Like the idea of let's do science sounds really good if that leads to progress.
Yeah.
But what it also does is lead to the diminishment of magic.
Right, because
either literally in the terms of a fantasy book where there is actually magic.
Yeah.
But when you get people who are overly rational and think that rationality is the only thing to do and science is the only way and order, all this different kind of stuff, it literally diminishes the world to remove either in a figurative sense people's the richness of human life that you don't put everybody in the same outfit. You're like, well, what's the rational thing to do? Well, if everyone is just in a uniform, great. And then everyone looks like, you know, North Korea or whatever it is. Or if you go, well, everyone should just learn the same language. So what are we going to do? We're going to have PAL is now, it's pretty much Esperanto. Mm-hmm. Because of course it's going to be, because you want there to be like nothing weird about the language and everybody has the same accent and everyone speaks in the same language.
And everybody understands each
other. And you don't have your own language anymore, and you're like, but what about all the art in this other language? No, we're all learning this new language.
So it's basically the opposite of anthropology, where you just observe and don't interact and don't.
Yeah,
you do the science like you do the thing.
I think you're just reading a bit too much into this.
Okay.
What I'm trying to say is anthropology isn't a pursuit of a conquering empire.
Yeah, it's
a conquering empire isn't interested in anthropology.
No.
Okay?
Yeah.
Like, there can be anthropologists. There was anthropologists who went out from the British Empire and things like that, you know, and they were all trying to find out these people here and discover these people here, and they would go up a river and try and find the Nile, the top of the Nile, or whatever it is like that. You know, the anthropology is a pursuit, but I want to get away from actually what science is and more to the point of having an empire which is based on ridding the world of magic.
Okay. But then it rids it of everything that makes it
Actually, yeah. What it does is then there's another layer to this, is that they have a way of rendering down magical objects. So if you find something and there's magic in it, mm-hmm. what they actually do is they have these processes where they can like render out the magic. Mm-hmm. And so that thing is now dust or nothing, or it doesn't have any magic left in it. And then those magic are put into these like canisters. And then those canisters can be used as fuel for magical things that they want to do.
Okay. So it's like harvesting.
Literally harvesting magic from the world, going out into the rest of the world, and then using up the magic until there is no more magic in that place. And those magic now fuels the guns, or it fuels your fighting forces, because they have like these magical robot kind of golem kind of robots, metal men, tin men kind of things, which run on these. And so
stolen magic.
So magic, which used to be in these magical items, then becomes a fuel source, and there's like a magical fuel source economy.
Okay.
Which again is purely sending up like a Brandon Sanderson-esque, you know, magic has to cost something. And they're like, what if it does cost something? And that's what in the first book, there's a lot of like pawn brokering. Then there's like magic ordering. They're like, oh, I'll find you some magic stuff. Because, you know, the whole city is saturated with magic here.
Okay.
So that's...
So it's like extraction and colonization.
So I mean, this book is the first book is super full of colonization and resource extraction, you know.
Yeah.
Because again, Adrian Tchaikovsky writes a rich world. He writes a world which is rich enough, which then allows you to find all of these things in there.
Hmm.
Because when he's writing a book, which is this big cast of characters in a full city, there is so much in here.
Yeah.
There is so many ideas and so many themes in there that, like, I'm not even going to touch on, like, half of the themes that you can get out of these books.
Right.
Because they are chunky fantasy books, which the overall theme isn't, if you get better at magic, you become the king.
Right.
Or whatever. Again, to be reductive about other fantasy books.
Yeah.
And also there's these kind of, like, found family kind of things going on, where the message isn't a found family is good, yes.
Yeah.
You know, like there is found family in these books, but it isn't a book which is about found family. It's about empire, but not just empire. And this is the really key thing, is that it's so easy just to say empire is bad.
Mm.
And that's sometimes, again, like the message of, like, you know, an overbearing nation next door is diminishing us here. But these books have, like, it's like just so much more subtle than that.
Yeah.
To the point where there's the narrator, David Thorpe, I've mentioned this before as well, when narrators will put on accents,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes the accents that they put on, and we mentioned this before, and I mentioned this in the, when I was talking about the audiobooks of Andy Serkis mm-hmm. doing Lord of the Rings, and he didn't choose which people got which accent.
Yeah.
So suddenly some people from the south were getting northern English accents, and some people from the north would get more neutral southern British accents.
Yeah.
And then the dwarves were Scottish, and I'm like, but wait, dwarves, are they all from the same, like, do they all have, you know, because he was just doing the accents that were used in the movie.
Yeah.
Whereas David Thorpe here can now do accents, and he can pick out, what do I want to do? And in this case, the local accent for the local people, I can't remember exactly where what the name of the city is, because it's just called the city of whatever the name of the city is, of the city of Last Chances, they all speak Scottish.
Okay.
Like the locals speak Scottish.
Right.
And some other people speak, like other people from other places speak other languages.
Mm-hmm.
But it does do the kind of Star Wars thing where the Empire, you get in the British actors. No, sorry, the English actors who then do the more,
the standard.
Yeah, the more standard British, more received pronunciation Queen's English kind of thing. And it works really well because the whole time you're thinking, oh, we are just in Glasgow. This is an industrial city and they've brought in everyone from the mountains. You know, they've cleared off all of the, you know, the farms and all of the crofters, and they've mm-hmm. all been brought into this city.
Yeah.
But there's like weird stuff going on in the city, but, you know, and shipbuilding and all the other stuff that goes on in Glasgow. And there's this, you know, this orderliness of British Empire. But while that's just one choice of like, oh, this could be like the English and how the English treat Scotland. Mm-hmm. There's other layers of this, which are also, oh, it's also how England treated India. And yeah. it's also how the Roman Empire, because now when we have stories about the Roman Empire, we're like, yes, gladiator. And they and they come into Germany and they kill the Picts, and then they go across and they kill the Picts.
But not on, I think actually with the Romans, from our perspective now, it's more like, oh, they had this really like far advanced technology,
you know.
And they had baths and mosaics and great architecture.
But, and also what I'm saying is the bringing of order, sort of like, yeah, they had straight roads.
Yeah.
And then when the Roman Empire fell, well, we didn't bother with straight roads, but now we have straight roads again. They, wouldn't it be great? And of course, they had their own things going on. But yeah, it's this interesting, again, there's some good stuff. And then, of course, the other magical people come in, have sort of like some Scandinavian or like Norwegian accents that you're picking up. And I'm like, all right, very good narration here as well.
Okay,
I want to mention some other things that were here as well. What's this? Oh, yeah. Do you remember in Alien Clay, did you read Alien
Clay?
Yeah, yeah. So in Alien Clay, there's the Mandate, which is the government back home on Earth.
Which is all about science.
Yes, because they're all basing it on this truth and, you know, scientific dogma.
Yeah.
Rather than religious ideas or, you know, social idea. Everything has to be rooted in science. But, of course, then they just say up front what the science should say or what the science should be. But I'm just saying that Adrian Tchaikovsky he's playing in the same space here of an authoritarian, you know, government or authoritarian, in this case, empire. But we never really, like in the first book, we don't really see the empire building stuff, because this is sort of like, oh, it's been 15 years since these guys have come in and everyone's resentful of them, but everyone is now just getting on with life. You know, the family, the crime families have realized they can just keep working here. The other families, the other criminals, the pawnbrokers, and then the students.
Yeah, once the dust has settled, everybody has to continue somehow.
And then it goes into, and I mentioned this before, in the previous book that we did by Adrian Tchaikovsky, which is he goes back in time to the student uprisings in Paris, and it's sort of like, oh, now we're in Les Mis, and I was like, oh, that's what it's like. And that is a big section of the end of this book is student uprising and barricades in the streets. So there's a lot of that going on. So other things that are mentioned in this book is a place called The Repose. And it's not just mentioned, this is actually quite a big part of it.
Okay.
There's this kind of croft of trees in the middle of this city.
Yeah.
Oh no, I'm actually getting two things mixed up. There's a tree thing that you go into this forest, and if you keep going through, there's like gateways to other parts of the world.
Okay.
So you can go in there and you can
like
pop out
travel
in a different land. Yeah.
Okay.
It's like
portals.
Yeah, it's some kind of portal thing. And the pal are like, hey, we should go in there and see if we can do some, you know, we can bring
some
order.
Impromptu.
We can do some bring order, and they go, and that's kind of what kicks it off, because, you know, going in there. And there's also something called The Repose, which is a part of, let me just say, what they did is a roadside picnic. There's a stalker area going on, like this, like Chernobyl area, which is like, oh, you don't go in there. And if you do go in there, you meet other, like, and you can get lost in there and you just don't come out. Or if you do, you come out changed.
Okay.
Or if you're in there, you have to walk in the right way and you have to like cover your eyes when you go past this and then open your eyes. And it's very roadside picnic. Mm-hmm. It's very extraction shooter as you have at the moment. Like, go in there, do the thing, and then you've got to, doesn't matter what you do in there, you then, to win, you've got to get out again.
Yeah.
And there's some fun roadside picnic. There's also a place called the Divine City. And it's very clear that this is another take on Omelas, which is the Ursula K. Le Guin story. Why don't we kill the child in the Omelas hole or something like that? So he has these, it's mentioned as well, and he's sort of like, yeah, it's a perfect city. And it's really weird because the pal go down there and they can't improve anything. They can't bring any more order to it, but there's obviously some kind of magic going on. And they're like, the pal are like, well, we don't want the magic, but there's nothing to improve because the city is already perfect. But also some people have walked away from the Divine City in the same way that some people walk away from Omelas.
Mm-hmm.
So again, just as it's just mentioned in this book, you know, there's a character from there or whatever. So again, lots of stuff. And I mentioned a lot of characters. I'm not going to go too much of the characters because lots of stuff happens. Not all of them survive. There might be one and a half heroes between all of them, but, you know, they muddle through. And yeah, and every now and then you have these mosaic chapters, which I think Perdido Street Station did as well, where they're like, all right, we spent some time with the characters. Now we're going to zoom out. And now we're going to have like a third person omniscient chapter of just saying, these people are doing this. This person's doing this. This is what's happened so far. Here we go. And then we dive back into individual viewpoint character chapters as well.
Interesting.
So let's leave that book behind.
How big is it?
Oh, these are chunky books. Let's open up City of Last Chances. It's 500 pages. Let me go to Audible.
Oh, yeah.
Audible.com. Yeah.
I did ask you to have all the pages open. But I forgot.
Yeah, I have the Goodreads pages open. I didn't have here as well. What am I looking for? City of Last Chances. Let's click on that one. House of Open Wounds. So the City of Last Chances is 20 hours long. Okay, and the House of Open Wounds, I remember, is a bit longer than that. Yeah, like 23 hours long.
Okay.
So let's move on to the House of Open Wounds.
Yeah.
This is, again, narrated by David Thorpe. And one character returns from the first book.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Yasnik, who is the priest from the first book.
With the god.
With the god.
Yeah.
Now, the cool thing about Yasnik is his god is a healing god.
Oh, nice.
And the god isn't very nice.
Oh.
But he's the healing god.
How does this go together?
Okay, that's the thing. If your godly power, or if you as a god have one thing that you do in the world, and that is create healing, you have to make sure that you don't heal the wrong person.
Yeah.
Because you get into this kind of like, again, fun, what we're trying to say, sort of like, you're yawning over there.
Sorry.
Don't worry, we'll get through this. You know, like a thought experiment style thing where you're like, you know, utility, that kind of thing. Like, oh, do you send the trolley on this one or down that, trolley problem kind of stuff. So if you're a healing god, but then you heal people who then go and kill people, have you increased healing in the world or have you reduced healing in the world? Mm. So the funny trick with Yasnik and his god is that if you accept that God into your life, say you're hurt in some way, you accept God into your life, if you ever cause anybody else, if you ever intentionally cause anybody else harm in the future, you immediately get unhealed and you suddenly get back all of your injuries.
Yeah.
So Yasnik has been brought up in this religion. So he's like, since he was young anyway, so he never hurts anyone. And it's really fun to have a protagonist or a point of view character anyway, who can't do any damage or hurt anyone at all.
Okay.
Because he's the priest of this religion. But then anyone who's converted to that religion, as soon as they punch someone, they immediately have their arrow wound back or their stab wound back, and then they just fall on the floor and die. Which is really fun. It's really fun to have like
much like it's promising of lots of comedy scenes.
Yeah, but it's also really tragic because Yasnik really wants to heal people.
Yeah,
and there's a reason why this god only has one priest and one follower at this point.
Yeah.
Is because every time that they convert people, people are like, yeah, great, and then they go off and then they just die out of sight. After the end of the first book, he doesn't die by the end of the first book.
Mm-hmm.
Not permanently, anyway. Again, because if you've got healing gods, you can almost die in lots of ways. So he is again, off screen. This happens between the books. He is captured because he's been smuggling gods out of the city.
Oh, there are multiple gods.
Yeah, there's not just one god. No, there's lots of gods because it's like pagan, like pre.
But only in his religion or in general, there are lots of gods.
He later in the first book, at some point, he gets the power to see all the gods.
Oh, nice.
Previously, you only see a god if you're a priest of that god.
Yeah.
But he has this little box, this little wooden box, which his god lives in, because the god is like a little leprechaun-y kind of sized person who lives in this little box.
Cute.
And again, mild spoilers for the first book. He falls out with his god and is sort of like, I'm not your priest anymore. But then all the other gods are like, you're a priest. We can come. And so all of the other gods are trying to convince him to become their priest. And so suddenly he's like, he can see all of the other gods.
Sweet.
And so what he does is, because he wants to save these gods from the pal who have now developed these goggles, which allow them to see magical and religious stuff. And so they look around and they find these gods or these god boxes and these things, and they render them down for magic.
Yeah.
And so because of that, Yasnik has been like ferrying gods in and out of the city. And so he turns up at the start of this book. He's been captured by the PAL. And they're like, great, you're... And they work out that he's a healer because, you know, because of they've worked... They, anyway, so, somehow they work out he's a healing god. So he then gets transported from the City of Last Chances over to where the frontline battles are taking place with the PAL, who are going up against the whatevers. And he's attached to something called the Experimental Field Hospital. And the experiment, and then this weird enough, this book is a lot more focused on just the characters in the field hospital.
Okay.
It's not a sprawling thing. It's not wide ranging. It's just
we
the people.
We got introduced in all the things and now we're
we
looking at
one. We know about
the
PAL. We know about the battles that are going on. We know the whole system.
Yeah.
And so now we've got a new cast of characters who are just with each other all the time.
Yeah.
And the Experimental Field Hospital has a lot of stuff going on because everyone there, or most of the people there, are what's called accessories. And accessories are people who are involved in the fighting force but aren't fighting, and also they're not PAL soldiers. They're not from the they're not citizens of the PAL empire. So it's people from different places who have been brought together, and they're not trusted to fight, but what they are trusted to do is you're now the healers.
Okay.
But also the PAL have been they work out that we can just use up magic straight away for fuel, but what we can actually do is we can use it if it's more efficient to use it immediately for healing. And then when those people are healed, they're good at fighting. It's worth it to leave the magic open and working and in the open, and you're just allowed to use magic, even though that would normally be banned outside of the army.
Yeah.
But if we bring you into the army, now you use those methods and...
You use it for our
And you use it for
intentions.
Our good yes, to okay. be able to do this.
Yeah.
And Yasnik turns up and there's these again these funny things where he heals a soldier using the god thing, and then the soldier goes out and dies, and he's brought him and like, you killed this guy. I was like, no, it wasn't me. Sort of like, but you said you healed him. It's like, no, I didn't heal him, it was the god. I'm not even his priest anymore. He's just probably, you know, and it's all this weird stuff going on.
And that
on.
Is such a dumb thing, like if you heal a soldier that then dies when he does
and that
violence
is, and that is one like... of the main things in this book is this like, okay, what are we gonna do? What's the utility of healing people, or is it better? And the Marine Army is like, we can't have soldiers who can't fight. Like, if we have a soldier who fights and they just immediately die. So, but it's not just him. You also get one each of all of the other kinds of magic that are going on in this experimental hospital, because they're like, and even if it's not really hospital-y kind of duties, they're all attached to this one unit because like, right, let's just put together all of the magic people who normally we would persecute and strip them of their magic. But if we just bring them all together here, they can be our little group of super magic users, and we'll just call it the experimental
and
hospital.
And also, I think what happens is that if you want to use certain things, you just keep them close.
Yeah.
And keep them like in check and in order.
Yeah.
And then you think you
and it's known
know
that this unit is the magic unit.
Yeah.
So if you need magic, you go there. If you need healing, you go there. But otherwise, stay away. So you get Prassel, who is the head, and she is the again this kind of like she is a necromancer. So she can bring people back from the dead or make dead people carry on and stuff. And you do get necromantic. Is that the word?
Yeah.
Soldiers and other people.
Like undead.
Yeah, undead soldiers. Mm. You get Yasnik, who's back. You get the Butcher, who is an alchemist.
Mm.
Can't remember his name. You get Masti, who is just a kid. You get the Butcher's kid, who is just a kid as well. You get, a mechanist, who's one of the people who makes, like, these, you know, robots out of metal.
Yeah.
And those are fun as well. You get... say Talifa here as well, who has a god. Oh, you've got Alv, who is from the Divine City that I mentioned before.
Yeah.
She's what's called a divinati, and she brings balance to everything.
Oh.
And the way she brings balance to them is by healing. Talifa has a god, which again I can't remember what it says, but then there's Loch Ivor, who is a disgusting person. His god is loves dirt and nasty stuff. So what he does, he plays music, and then any infection that's in a wound comes out and like jumps to his god, and his god feeds on infections and bacteria and viruses. So they're all like, hey, we're a really good hospital here. And then the, you know, the necromancer was like, I don't have enough dead bodies, we need more dead bodies. But then the experimental hospital is so good that nobody dies of their injury, like everyone who's brought there survives, and they don't have enough dead people to for the necromancers to go.
Which is such a conundrum. If you're in a war and then you don't have to, you don't happen to have enough dead injured people.
Yeah, and then you get these other people who are like, there was also Erinal, who was mentioned in this book, who was obviously like an angel. Mm-hmm. He was there, but turns out she was too powerful, mm-hmm. and couldn't exist with this. So these the people can't become too powerful, because mm-hmm. if you suddenly come in and you're like an angel with a burning sword, and you come in and be like, yes, I'm now an accessory to your army, and they were like, no, too much. Anyway, she got rendered down for the magic in her. Then there's Lidlet, who is a new convert who can't do any harm, and she's a fun character. And you get these other fun characters as well. Again, I didn't make note of all the names, but it's
so even though this is now a more focused place and time, you still have a big group of diverse characters.
Yeah, and they all have different things that they want, but a lot of them just want to get on with it, you know. Yeah. And again, weirdly enough, I started off this book and I was like, you know, got into bed and I was like, all right, time to get some sleep. I'm going to start a book and then I'll fall asleep with it. It just starts off in the middle of like a battle, and they're bringing these wounded people into the, and it's like, and this person reached into this person's gut and tied off their gut so it wouldn't bleed. And then this person reached into this way. And it's about but I was like, oof, that's a bit much. And then I just stopped listening for a few days. I was like, no, I need a book to fall asleep to. And I can't, I mean, of course, I did start listening to a book called The House of Open Wounds.
Yeah.
So like, House of Open Wounds. Like what kind of thing do I think I'm getting here as well?
Yeah.
What else? What other things? Oh, decanters. That's the name. That's what they call when they, instead of rendering down magic, they say they decant the magic. They collect magic from the world and they render it into these things called tablethi, which are these like little tablets, like these little clay tablets with that. So what this book is about how the Palpatine army isn't doing so well. It's like bumping up against other powerful countries or empires or cities.
Mm-hmm.
And they realize we need to start ramping up reliance on different kinds of magic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a funny thing where like our mission is to rid the world of magic and bring order. Except once that gets a bit hard, we need to harness the power of order of magic to defeat the magic and then to bring order.
So it turns out we don't want to get rid of it.
To get rid of it. We say we want to get rid of it, but what we want to do is not get rid of it.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. Since finishing this book, I read a book called Apple in China by Patrick McGee. It's a really good book, but again, you've got to kind of be interested in technology and business and things that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
But it's really fantastic. And what it shows is, again, this is just my reading of it. There's many readings of these Adrian Tchaikovsky books of this series.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of having like this civilizing force of the Palpatine,
mm-hmm.
what we have in this book is like, it feels very modern authoritarianism.
Yeah.
A modern take on authoritarianism.
Okay.
Which is not wiping out the enemy,
mm-hmm.
but subsuming and using the enemy. And one of the main things that was talked about, or one of the big like messages in this book, Apple in China, mm-hmm. is that everyone thought, what we'll do is China will open up. Mm-hmm. They'll open up to business, they'll join the World Trade Organization, and capitalism will come in, mm-hmm. and the internet will come in, mm-hmm. and technology will come in, and all of like people in China will be exposed goes to the outside world and
nobody wants to be Chinese in China anymore.
Well, just democracy will follow capitalism.
Yeah.
And capitalism will come in. And what China did, they were like, yes, bring in the internet. We'll have the internet and bring in outsourcing of jobs and manufacturing and bring in this and bring in that and invest in the country and bring it all in. You know, everything's going good. And then Xi Jinping goes, right, we're now subsuming all of this. And now we're going to turn more hardline again. And we're going to put in place all the cronies and the previous ideas are going out and we're going to turn back to the... And so what people find difficult to understand about China is that they keep calling themselves a communist country.
Yeah.
And in some ways it is a communist country, but it's more like national communism or national socialism rather than socialism, like communist social. You know, it's this weird thing that they are subsuming the internet. That they're like, yes, we'll have all the benefits of the internet, but also we'll have the Great Firewall of China and massive surveillance, and we're going to use it. And you're like, and the rest of the world is like, yay, the internet lets us all be free, and we all have free speech, and we can all share knowledge, and we can all do this, and we can all do that.
Yeah.
And China is like, yes, all of that, and we will now subsume it and use it for our own benefits. And like, the World Trade Organization is really good. Everyone's trading equally, and everyone's trading. And China is like, yes, we'll do that, and also we'll, you know, peg our currency to the dollar, and we'll do all this kind of stuff. And they just, in what they've done in China is like just like sucked everything into China.
Yeah.
And now China has the best manufacturing, the best solar panels, the best electric cars, they're all of the stuff that we want to be good in the world.
Yeah.
That and progressive. And we're like, yes, it's all good. And you're like, oh, but it's all being subsumed into an authoritarian government.
A capitalist kind of, you know, it's like...
No, I'm saying capitalism has been subsumed.
Yes.
Like, the tools of capitalism don't work like capitalism should in China anymore.
No, like, not in China, but everything outside is so, like, every other country is so... reliant
on China.
On China.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That if you look around, wherever you are, just imagine your room around you without any products from China. You would be literally sitting.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe concrete.
But again, I kind of don't want to talk about what's happened outside of China. I'm saying on the inside of China, all of the tools that we thought would be like, oh, and that'll go towards democracy. But then even like in Hong Kong, democracy has been subsumed and all these other kind of things, which you would think be like, you know, be able to be forces of good in the world.
Mm.
Again, good in the world being in the idea of the explicitly stated policy goals of if we open up and China opens up to capitalism, democracy will follow.
Mm-hmm.
A very clear policy goal or a very clear idea or ideal that was attempted. It turns out that hasn't happened.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That doesn't happen. And again, there's other things there, you know, there's other things going on where we're like, oh, well, if we work with China rather than against China, it's going to be okay. Oh, we're going to work together and we're going to bring in like standards of, and this is Apple, standards of worker benefits and not so much overtime. And like, and other people are like, oh, if we put nets around our factories, when people jump off to kill themselves, they'll be caught in the nets. And they're like, no, not that, you know, and all of these different things where we are like, no, if we engage with China, that's what we need to do. We need to get, and again, I'm just taking this from the point of view of just having finished a book about Apple in China. But you're like, ah, that's what authoritarian governments, and that's what these systems do. And this is me talking about China style communism subsuming capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
So it's both the most communist and the most capitalist country at the same time.
Yes.
And you're like, well, how does that work? But that's what's happening in this book, where they're like, oh, this is a story about how authoritarian.
We want to get rid of the magic.
We want to get rid of it, but they become the most magic user. They become the biggest user of magic to stamp out magic. And this is what happens in capitalism as well.
Yeah.
We're like, let's use this. And you're like, ah, but that was a social message, but they're just using it as marketing. So what becomes like, it's going to be punk. It's going to be like anti-establishment. And then capitalism subsumes the message of anti-capitalism and brings it into capitalism. And then sells it back to you, and you're like, but I want to exist in the world with magic.
Yeah.
And you're like, ah, but you're not allowed to. But then we're going to use that magic and we're going to use it against you. And that's what these books do so well. They are, again, along with everything else that's going on these books, what really stood out to me is how structures of authority subsume things into themselves, twist them, and then use it back against you, either as a subject of the empire, a conquered people of the empire, someone just living under capitalism, someone living under communism. Like, it doesn't actually, in the end, matter what the system is. Yeah. And again, this is exactly what Rome did. They would go out and they were like, what are your local deities? That's close enough to Jupiter, or that's close enough to, you know, Mars, or whatever it's going to be, you know, like whatever the their things are. And then you get, oh, well, that's this thing. You're like, ah, it's not anymore. It's going to be this new thing. And then Christianity did the same thing as well. They're like, oh, what are your pagan festivals? Great. Christmas. Yeah, it's about, you know, sitting around a fire.
A light and whatever.
Yeah, it's about hanging decorations on a tree. Great, that's now a Christian thing. And you're like, wait, but it wasn't. And it's sort of like, no, everything gets subsumed into the thing. And then later on, Christianity gets subsumed into the ruling classes. And then there's like, now we're going to be against the Catholics. We're going to be Protestants. And then over in England, we're like, Henry VIII is like, great, Protestant. I'm a Protestant now. It's like, yeah, but you just wanted to, like, you wouldn't get a divorce. And it's all like, now we're, and you're like, and then all of the abbeys and cathedrals in England are like knocked down and robbed, and all of that money goes towards the country. You're like, oh, it was just subsumed, and now the Church of England, the head of the Church of England is literally Prince Charles, and he has bishops and things, you know. And it's just that all these books are about the subsuming power of structures of authority.
The authoritarian structure puts its own system on something, and then extracts what benefits itself.
Yeah.
And that way, you can have.
And that's
it,
what happens to everyone here. Like, yeah, the people who are like the Divinati is sort of like, no, but I'm using it to bring balance. And they're like, and now it's used as a weapon of war. And the other people are like, and now I'll do this. And then they're like, oh no, this was meant to be a good thing. This was good magic. And they're like, and now it's war magic. And now it's magic for stamping out magic. And now it's magic for defeating. And again, it's using all of this as along with everything else in this book, this is the thing that really stood out to me, is like, I want to have I want purity in the thing that I have.
Yeah.
And it's almost impossible in a world now where everyone is interconnected and everybody is just a WhatsApp message away from everybody else, or an email away from everywhere else, or a social media post away from everywhere else. It's almost impossible for anything to be created in the world and stay pure as an individual artwork, or before it gets memeified and tropified, and suddenly it's not there anymore.
Yeah.
And I would find it kind of exhausting, because the same thing happens with books. The same thing happens with science fiction and fantasy books.
Yeah.
That they start off and you're like, oh, this is something new and interesting. Within two books, it's like, no, this has to be a trilogy and a long-running series. And then it gets turned into a TV show, or it gets adapted into something, and you're like, ah, the thing that it is now supporting the thing that it isn't. You know what I mean? There'll be a message in a book about how great writing is and how amazing it is to be, you know, a writer, and reading is the most important thing. And then that gets turned into a movie and you're like, no, it can't. Like, the whole point of this was that this should be read, you know? And it just happens layer and layer and layer down. So that's what this is. And again, it is quite fun. Again, as I made one more note here. In both books, there's like lots of setup, lots of time with the characters, and then both books pay off in a kind of clever sci-fi-esque logical kind of quandary, where they go, I didn't think of that, did you? And it is quite fun in both of the books that it does that. And I'm sure in the third book, he will put together these people who understand magic to such a degree where it removes the magic and just becomes a logic puzzle. It just becomes like, programming, or, you know, oh, if I deploy this, it becomes like, and now we corner the market on this. Of course, that isn't what happens, but I'm just saying it feels like the end of a movie where they go, ah, but it turns out if we just combine this thing and this thing, or if we just have this bit of information, we can trick everyone. You know, it's a bit like the end of, I guess, I'm trying to think of an example movie, but I can't. Trading Places? where they're like, oh, it turns out if we just had the information about the orange harvest at the start, we can have this big thing that pays off and now we win. And, you know, anyway, I'm just saying it feels that both books feel like there's a lot of stuff going on, but it's like, how do I wrap this up in a satisfying way? And when it does wrap up, you're like, ah, I see what you did there. That okay. is actually very clever. In the second book, I kind of saw it coming, but it's always this thing where they do at the end of the book. So I'm like, all right, I've got this real plan. Let me tell you the plan. And the chapter ends and I'm like, all right, okay. So I don't get to hear him telling the plan. I just get to see the plan playing out. And then it takes a few more chapters and yeah, all right, good job you.
Okay.
Good job you.
And so the next one you're going to read is the novella.
Yeah, because it's the novella, it actually says here, what I'm looking for, it says, this is the book 2.5, Lives of Bitter Rain. And it says, Angeli is a child of PAL soldiers stationed in occupied Jarakir. It's that story there, I noticed. And then the Days of Shattered Earth, she is then the main character. Or
okay,
one of
so,
them.
So the
sage
novella
and vigilator
introduce...
Angeli, Gil to her friends, and it's the same person. So
the novella's there to introduce her.
Yeah,
and
I
her
think it's sort of like her backstory. Her as a child, mm-hmm. and then you could probably just read the book, but I thought, why not just read it in... it's not in publication order because this is a novella that was published this year.
Yeah.
The Lives of Bitter Rain, and book 3 is published in 2024. So I guess I could read either of them in any order, but might as well just do it in the order that it's mentioned here on Goodreads. 2.5
right. Yeah.
And then 2.5 and then 3. So that's what I'm going to get up to. So there you go. That's my reviews. I think we've talked about it. Good,
okay.
Good talk.
So how are you going to rate the books? Individually or as one thing? Or how are you going
to
do it?
I think I'll just... Like, individually, they are both 4 to 4.5-star books.
Good.
The first book, I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
I would give that... The second book, I enjoyed in that kind of second book way that it doesn't have to explain the world and it can go deeper into the characters. Mm-hmm. And one of the characters you know from the previous world, from the book and things like that.
Yeah.
And also, it does feel a bit long. The first book, what does it say here, is 20 hours and 7 minutes. Mm-hmm. The House of Open Wounds is 23 hours and 1 minute. I wish it had been the same 20 hours and 7 minutes as the first book. There is a section in the middle where I'm going, oh, we did a thing and now we're just like circling around a bit.
Okay.
And it feels like we go around in circles like one too many time there.
Okay.
But there is so much good stuff in these books. Like, again,
nice.
I'm not saying all the characters are amazing, but that they all feel like individual characters, that they all want different things.
Yeah.
Feels totally different from like these other books where like, and now a found family. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, what do you want? Oh, you want to be an expression of the author... of the author's ADHD, and you want to be an expression of a past trauma, and that somebody can, and you want to be an expression of, oh, we need someone who is a trans character. Yeah. And you need to be an expression, oh, this is someone, you know, you understand, it feels like the different people in some of these found family kind of stories is like, oh, it's just a cast, and they all just, what do they all want? Well, that person wants to get on, and this person wants to find belonging, and this person wants to find peace, and this person, and they all come together and they all find it together.
Yeah.
And this book is like, well, this person wants this one thing, and this person wants to kill everybody else, and this person wants to, they've got some problems with this god, and this person over here is, you know, is a demon prostitute, and this person over here, and you're like, whoa, all of these people obviously want different things.
Like, so it's the opposite of this weird yesterday watched a movie, a little YouTube video where it says over inclusivity. So this is the opposite of over representation. It is not about having one character representing all the current you need to have.
I don't even want to say that. Like, I don't mind a book which is wanting to have representation.
Well, yes.
What I'm trying to say is all of those characters, they have a diversity of traits.
Yes.
They don't have a diversity of desires and goals and aims and outcomes which are mutually possible.
Yeah.
Imagine a found family novel where one person in the found family is a demon who is like in the nature of the demon, the way that the demon's mind works is if you are contracted with the demon will now do everything it possibly can to fuck you over.
Okay.
But what if they're a friend of yours and you're like, oh, what I'll do is I'll buy out your contract.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, you can't buy out my contract, because if you own the contract to me, I'm not free. Then it's in my nature to hurt you. And I'm like, this is a lot cleverer than somebody like having a found family and just saying, oh, this person's got borderline personality disorder. It's like, no, but what if borderline personality disorder is represented by a contract between a demon and someone who loves the demon, mm-hmm. but that, like, bringing those two things together will cause pain and suffering for both people in that relationship.
Yeah.
You understand that?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That is different from a kind of like, oh, found family. Oh, yeah. And this person's got borderline personality disorder. Yes, but we'll all just be very nice to them and understanding and loving, and we'll work with them. And at the end of the book, we're like, yes, and we all got on a spaceship and we go off and have further adventures of us found family where everybody just gets on perfectly and everything's really cozy. And at the end of this book, it's sort of like, oh, maybe it's best if I just go back to hell. And you're like, that's rough. You know what I mean? Like, this is like his take on like grimdark fantasy here is so much more compelling than anything that anyone who's ever verged into cozy anything is aiming for. It says so much more about like what it's actually like to be a group of people trying to get on when there's actually some drama between you. And of course it's supernatural drama and it's magic based drama and it's personality based drama and you're just from a different country and we're meant to be enemies, you know, all this different kind of stuff going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, all of that is just a lot more, it's just a lot more,
it feels richer.
Yeah, it is. And that's what I'm saying, this is like 20 hour audiobooks of just richness. And anything that you want to tease out of these novels, it's possible to tease out. Again, I've just done an hour and 5 minutes on two books. I could do, you know, if you do a close reading of this, you could talk for an hour on each chapter of this book. It has that same depth and richness of the best of epic fantasy.
Yeah.
Where it's sort of like anything is possible here, but what's most possible is being able to read deeply into these things.
Okay.
Where someone has put thought into all of those things. And even if he hasn't, Adrian Tchaikovsky is just a good enough writer that when he starts a chapter, he knows by the end of it, the two people in the book in that chapter will have different goals or different views or different, slightly different personalities or slightly different reasons for doing something by the end of the chapter than they do at the start of the chapter, or else there's no point in writing the chapter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's what he's so good at.
Unlike other books where you have just an accumulation of themes that it's like, and then we touch on this theme and we touch on this theme and we touch on this theme, and then it never really, any of them never really play out.
Yeah.
It's like the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, some themes are touched on and some things are referenced and some things are background and some things just inform it.
But it doesn't feel like it doesn't feel like there's like huge, big philosophical topics that then are not...
not addressed.
Yeah,
yeah. If Adrian Tchaikovsky is clever enough to write a book where he acknowledges all of these issues, and even if some of them aren't the main issue, it kind of reveals that he's thought of them.
Yes.
It reveals that he is considering these things.
Yeah.
And again, and the weirdest thing is at the end of the second book, like the pal are in a battle and I'm like, well, I hope they win. And it's this weird thing. I'm like, oh no, I didn't. No, I shouldn't be. No, I shouldn't. And this is the same thing that happens in the Apple in China book. You're like, at the start, you're like, oh, this is great. This plucky young company or this plucky company, which is on the verge of bankruptcy, but they have a hit product with the iMac and they get that built in, you know, in Taiwan. And then they just can't build enough iPods. And it's all this thing. Oh, now they're making the money. Oh, they're doing a good thing. And you know, the story from the outside. And then by the end, they're like, oh, and they're propping up a violent authoritarian dictatorship, and again they are employing people who are contract, who are bussed in from like 200,000 people at a time, bussed in from villages across China to work in the factories. Again, they're technically not Apple factories, they're Foxconn factories, and you're just sort of like, oh, the all of the stuff that Adrian Tchaikovsky is talking about, especially in that first book, about literally doing business, contract business, contract manufacturing business with the lords of hell to bus in workers. And you're like, oh, right. This is all underlying what he's doing, like the cleverness of what he's doing. We're like, yeah, we all love fresh blankets. We all like clean linen. We all like, well, I'm saying because there's linen, there's clothes factories that they have in that city.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, we all like cheap clothes, but are we literally doing business with the princes of hell to make our clothes more affordable? And again, I'm not trying to say that, you know, yellow peril. That's not the angle. I don't want to have a yellow peril angle on this. I'm talking about the deals that we make to have the things that we want.
Mm-hmm.
Is something that is wielded against us by systems of authority,
mm-hmm.
either intentionally or accidentally, or that's just the systems. Like, over time, these systems get built up, and now these are the systems that we have to be in. And it's just really tricky. And that's,
yeah.
I think, the core part of what these books are about, is that we end up in systems which will strip us of our humanity and of our joy and our good intentions. And I think that's a really good foundation for very fun, grimdark fantasy.
Yeah.
And that's a weird thing, because it's Adrian Tchaikovsky. He writes like, you know, like a Douglas Adams and a Terry Pratchett. And, you know, this definitely feels of the like three Ringworld novels I've read in my life. This is, no, Ringworld? No, what's it called? Ringworld.
Yeah.
No, not Ringworld.
No.
Wrong one. What's the Terry Pratchett book with the Discworld? That's it. Okay.
Yeah.
Discworld. It's a bit Discworld, because it's sort of like, there's a fantasy thing, bring it in. There's another fantasy thing that exists here as well. There's another fantasy thing. Well, let's do that too. You know, it's like one of everything, you know.
Yeah.
Like I say, because he's writing very high level social commentary and satire.
Mm-hmm.
But with all of the grim, dark fantasy stuff going on too, again, it just makes everything really rich. So
yeah.
I'm going to give these books 4.5 stars out of 5.
Cool.
Now that I think about it, I'm not sure why I'm not giving the first book 5 stars. But let's give it 4.5 stars.
That was your first
well,
instinct.
The thing is, I finished the first book. Let me have a look now. If I have a look back here, when did I City of Last Chances? It'll probably say here on my review of, where's my review? Oh no, I've got to go down here, then I've got to click that, and then I've got to click that. I click a button just to bring up a single link. Yeah. So I actually finished this in July, this first novel.
Oh right.
So,
okay.
So there was obviously some things which didn't sit with me that I only wanted to give it 4.5 stars, but I can't remember what that 0.5.
That's always what happens.
So let's give it 4.5 stars for these books together, and hopefully the next two books, this novella and novel, which I will get to over Christmas. I don't know. I've got lots of other books that I've got want to get to. So.
Yeah. Let's see if that keeps holding up.
I hope so. Again, and people say it was his best book from last year.
Nice.
And again, I think these fantasy books are doing a much better job of talking about authoritarianism and authority and rebellion, like he was doing in Alien Clay. Mm-hmm. These books are better than that.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Together, at least. I mean, not together, but like even individually,
yeah.
They are better statements about authoritarian and rebellion than Alien Clay was, because that's kind of doing it on an easy mode, and doing it on these is doing it on a hard mode.
I understand.
Right, that's
okay,
it.
Okay, cool.
An hour and 12 minutes on this. Should we go over? I think I've done enough. I don't want to see what other people have thought about it. B gives it 5 stars. Paul Spence gives it 3 stars. And what's the other one? House of Open Wound. What do I? Friends and followers or friends. I looked at some of that because I wanted to get the names of some of them as well. B gave it 5 stars. Ziven rated it 4 stars. The House of Open Wounds wasn't what I expected. He says it's not a middle book in a trilogy and it has an ending. Yeah, it's actually quite fun. Yeah, so... Oh, yeah, this is why I was saying Pratchett. It says, a friend of mine told me that the characters in the series remind him of Pratchett characters and that House of Open Wounds reminds him of the Monstrous Regiment. Now that he has brought my attention to it, I can't unsee it.
Yeah.
I've not read enough Pratchett to really see that. Again, just from the Pratchett that I have read, knowing that it's very satirical fantasy world kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It says, Tchaikovsky isn't Pratchett and isn't trying to be Pratchett. He's not trying to be funny, but the social commentary, humanism and satire are reminiscent of Terry Pratchett. So
Okay, cool.
Thanks, Ziven, for reminding me of that and why I put it in my note, because otherwise I would have used examples of other less known British authors who do this kind of thing.
Yeah. Cool. What's up next?
Next up, we will do a review of When There Are Wolves Again.
Yes.
I say next up. Yulia, you just started that book last night.
I literally just started. So, I'm in the second chapter.
Yeah. So when you finish that book, we will review that book. I've got some other books here, which I... let me go back to other books that I've finished and haven't done a review of yet. Oh, The Quantum Magician, which is one of the SFBRP must-read books that I read and wanted to review at some point. Inversions by Ian M. Banks, again, another one, which I might do another thing about.
Yeah.
House of Open Wounds. Yeah, and that's it. So just those two books, Quantum Magician and Inversions.
Yeah.
And I might do some other episodes of some other books, because it turns out I've read like 8 books this year, science fiction books that I have not reviewed yet, because they're like in this style, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, and some of them are from the must read list.
Yeah.
And in the past, either you have done a review or we have done a review, and I find it then even more difficult to get myself round
to sit down
to talk about something we've talked about in the past and I have completely forgotten again.
Yeah, we did that when we talked about... Did we talk about the Solaris? Yeah, we did do an episode about Solaris, and we did do one about Earth Abides. But there's a few of these books that we've reread.
And it feels like, especially with Solaris, it feels like I have talked
about it again. Here's our fourth episode on Solaris.
Yes.
So either way, I will probably get to some of these books, and then another book which I reviewed years and years ago when it first came out, called Anathem by Neal Stephenson.
Oh.
Also a book that's on the SFBRP must reads list.
Yeah.
This one we will talk about, because I'm sure there'll be some good stuff to talk about, but that's a big book. It's like 30-hour audiobook. So that should get me through maybe another few weeks worth of listening.
Right.
Depending on what how my next work trip goes, or if I have any podcasts to catch up with.
I have a few weeks of still busy coming up, but I hope maybe then over the Christmas...
Yeah, tell people what you're doing. You're doing it on next Sunday. Saturday.
Yeah.
You're doing a concert in the Berlin Cathedral.
I do.
The biggest cathedral in Berlin.
Yeah, it's big. It's a first performance of a Requiem that was just written last year.
You say it was just written last year. It was written for you. Juliana is the soprano soloist, the only soloist there. And
he clearly states that he wanted a boy soprano. No, to be honest, that he wrote that he doesn't want a operatic soprano voice singing it.
Yeah.
And because I don't have an operatic soprano voice, the only way of giving directions to other performers is to write, okay, this needs to sound like a boy soprano.
Oh, okay. And you can do a really good boy soprano, vibrato.
No, my voice is more like a boy soprano. Okay. So this is why.
Anyway, that's really good fun. So if you're in Berlin on Saturday, come along. Are there any tickets left?
A few, actually. It's getting close to be really... completely sold out.
There's 1,300 seats in this cathedral.
And we're at like 970, 980.
Just under 1,000 tickets sold. Yep. So anyway, this is Juliana's biggest concert of the year.
Yep.
You've done various versions of this already
because
it's like a big project where there's like six choirs,
six ensembles. Yeah, six choirs.
And they've individual choirs have all done like a reduced version of the concert, of the program.
Yeah.
And now this is the first time that they're bringing together six choirs.
Yeah.
And the Lyris Ensemble and Juliana as soloist. So that's going to be really good fun.
Yeah, hope so.
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I'm not going to be there,
but
I'm looking forward to I'm going to. You're working and I'm working. So next work trip, I'll get more into Anathem and hopefully record some solo podcasts. Yeah. I keep saying I'm going to do it.
It makes sense. This is your next podcast. Your next cruise is going to be a crossing, right?
Yes, so 7 days at sea.
Yay.
See what the weather's like at this time of year sailing across the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah.
Right, that's it from us. You can follow us on Goodreads, become our friends. So we can see what you think of the books we read.
Yep.
Really looking forward to talking to you about When There Were Wolves again.
Okay.
And and I've got some other books that I want to get to, but I'll talk about them in the future. You can email me luke@juggler.net if you've got any questions, or message me on Goodreads, or go over to the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads and throw stuff in there. Not had much action on that forum for a while.
Yeah.
Don't know if anyone still listens to this podcast. Who knows? Anyway, thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.